Hello and welcome to another edition of the NBA Outlet presented by OTGBasketball.com. Be sure to follow OTG on Twitter at OTGBasketball. Also hit that subscribe button. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me today, OTG's very own Jonathan Ibrahim. What's up, Jonathan?
Doing well, Nick. Thanks for having me again. I'm excited for the playoffs. I know they're just around the corner. Just got to get through these last few regular season games.
Yeah, this last week or two of games right now, we're going to get through that. Harris couldn't make it today, but we got Jonathan who's filling in right now. He's going to fill that role great. We're going to talk Warriors, Cavs, MVP race, Raptors. So definitely going to be some good stuff. But let's start with the Cavs and Warriors. You know, the Warriors right now are ascending. 10-game winning streak. They're playing great, and they're missing their best player, Kevin Durant. They have two wins over the Rockets, a win over the Spurs, a win over the Grizzlies, and a win over the Bucks all in this 10-game winning streak. And the Cavs, on the other hand, lost four of their last six, looking a little bit shaky. Their coaches called them out and said they look slow. Are you concerned with this? Do you still think we're going to see a Cavs-Warriors finals, or is that kind of, you know, a little bit in danger right now?
I still think there's going to be a Cavs-Warriors finals. I don't think there's really much in jeopardy or much that's going to jeopardize that. But the one thing that is something the Cavs need to worry about is their defense, because any one of those top four teams behind them can get hot at any time. They can beat them with their offense, and maybe not over a 7-game series, but if they have a couple bad games and then that defense falls through, they could be in a little bit of trouble. So I think that the Cavs do need to focus, do need to get everything right. The problems on defense, I don't think anybody else is going to be representing the East in the finals.
Yeah, it's still tough to see the Cavs, you know, not making the finals, especially because we've seen them come back against 3-1 against the Warriors. So, you know, if you give me the Raptors, the Wizards, or the Celtics, and the Cavs are down in the series, I might just think the Cavs might come back again. They have that type of level of effort and intensity, and they have obviously all-time great in LeBron James. But I agree with you. I think the defense is a real issue, and I think that's what's going to kill them in the finals. I know that's like a little premature to talk about, but I obviously think that Cavs and Warriors are going to match up again. And I think that defense and that lack of athleticism and kind of like that slow vibe that team has is going to hurt them. Obviously, you can make up with it with team defense a little bit, but how much can you do it when every position, you know, they don't have great defenders across the floor? There's guys they have to clean up for. Some of the guys they picked up, you know, they help offensively, like a Kyle Korver. He might help you a lot. Channing Frye might help you a lot on offense. Even Darren Williams isn't a great defender. So I think there's some issues with that bench and overall defense for that team. And I think it'll somewhat get exposed in the playoffs, but I still think they'll be in okay position to get to the finals.
I think once they get to the finals, the defense changes a little bit too, because that rotation shrinks down quite a bit. You don't have guys like Kyle Korver and Darren Williams playing as many minutes. Mm-hmm. So, and then on the other side of that, you know, Kyrie, for some reason, always seems to step up his game when he's playing against Steph. He always knuckles down on defense, hits big buckets on the other side. So I'm not too worried about Kyrie. It's Kevin Love, I think, would be probably their biggest concern, and how many minutes he's going to play matching up with a guy like Draymond Green, who is a beast on both sides, right?
Exactly. And Draymond's going to run around, keep him busy all game. And actually, talking about the Warriors side a little bit, I think that signing of Matt Barnes kind of went under the radar, but I think that's going to come up big for them. He gives them another bench piece that really fits the style of play they're going to play. And we haven't even talked about it yet. Kevin Durant is going to come back soon. And when they get him back, obviously he's probably the second best player in the NBA by most people's standards. And they're already playing at a really high level. Like I mentioned, a 10-game winning streak and playing some great defense. Now getting back one of the best players in the league, obviously it's not going to be an instant transition. He's not going to fit in there perfectly. But by the time they get deeper in the playoffs, this team is going to look very, very, very good.
Yeah, it's looking like it's going to be the Cavs and the Warriors in the finals. And it's hard to see another team that's going to represent either conference. San Antonio, I probably would have favored them a little bit before I watched them play Golden State this week and just watched them blow them out of the water after having such a hole to get out of.
Bad start.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was talking to some friends yesterday, actually, and they were discussing that because I was telling them, you know, if I had a pick today, if I, you know, was putting money down based off what I know, I'd pick the Warriors to win the championship. And that win over the Spurs told me a lot. And then getting two wins over the Rockets, you know, in the same week is very difficult to do. You know, the Rockets aren't a slouch. They're probably the third or fourth best team in the league. So, and to beat them twice in the same week tells me a lot. And a lot of people had the Rockets, too, as a team that maybe could beat the Warriors. But right now, it looks like the Western Conference doesn't really stand much of a chance against Golden State.
And the scary thing about last night's game against the Rockets was Golden State won that game with their defense. They didn't win that game with their offense. I know it was a high scoring game, but if you watch that fourth quarter, they just started to press. They started to lock down on the defensive end, and those easy buckets that Houston are used to, they weren't getting any of them.
Exactly. And then Golden State is able to create turnovers with their defense, and that leads to easy buckets for them. And I think that's what's an underrated fact about Golden State, and it's been underrated for the last few years. You know, a lot of fans have always talked about, oh, they're a high-scoring team. They're going to outpace you. They're going to put up points. They're going to shoot threes. But they also can lock in defensively. And all of them kind of have an idea of what they're doing as a team, and their rotations are great. And having a player like Draymond Green, who's like got that little extra edge, really helps them a lot. And I think adding, I mentioned Matt Barnes, he kind of brings a little bit of toughness to that team too. So they have some nice versatile pieces that really fit well in their defense and what they're trying to do. And a lot of teams can't react to the rotations that they make. But talking about that, I want to talk about the Raptors a little bit. You know, Jonathan's from Canada, so he has a little bit of inside info here. I feel like the Raptors are kind of getting disrespected a little bit. You know, their best player has been out, since the All-Star break. So, and they're still getting wins. DeMar DeRozan's been great. They added players like Serge Ibaka, PJ Tucker. Damari Carroll starting to look healthy. So what do you think about the Raptors? Are they being disrespected? Are they a real threat in the East with Lowry back?
Well, for starters, the Raptors get disrespected every season, so it's not really anything new. They don't get a lot of media time in the States, so you guys don't see anything that we see up here or anything. It's just the way it is. When Chris Bosh was in Toronto, he kind of flew under the radar as well. And then when he went to Miami, everyone's like, oh, this guy's pretty good. But, we kind of feel like that every year. They kind of get overlooked a little bit. Even last season, they won 56 games. And they really weren't given much of a chance to beat the Cavs. And they ended up taking them six games. So,
yeah, I think that's a little bit of
disrespect every year.
Yeah, definitely. I agree with that. You know, a little bit of disrespect every year, especially when they had Chris Bosh. Like, a lot of people slept on Bosh. Obviously, he did change his game a little bit when he went to Miami, focused more on defense. But last year, like you said, 56 wins. They take the Cavs to six. Nobody really showing him much respect. This year, they're missing their best player. They're still holding their own. And they added some nice pieces, but no one really wants to talk about them. There's really a lot of talk about the Celtics and the Wizards.
Yeah, and I mean, that's fine. It's not that big of a deal. The Raptors did take a step back this season. They've got a few new pieces, and they're still figuring out their defense. But and of course, you mentioned Kyle's been out for over a month now. But a while back, I was asked who I think is going to give the Cavs the biggest scare in the playoffs, and I think it's the Raptors. I don't think it's Boston or Washington. In fact, if I'm LeBron or if I'm Tyronn Lue, I'm looking at the standings. I'm thinking, geez, like, I really hope Toronto gets in that third seed, because I don't want, if I'm Cleveland, I'm hoping I lock in the first seed and then don't have to worry about Toronto in the second round.
What do you think Toronto's advantages are against the Cavs, and why they would pose, you know, a bigger threat possibly than the Wizards and Celtics?
It's their size at the wing position. It's their versatility. It's a number of different looks they can give LeBron defensively. And then their best offensive players are both guards, and Cleveland's struggles defensively defending the perimeter. They struggle defending point guards. They struggle defending off guards. So I think Toronto's just is not a nice matchup for them. They've got a lot of size. Cleveland usually, you know, that's one of their advantages, is a lot of size, a lot of rebounding. But Toronto's got a lot of size. Serge Ibaka, Jonas Valanciunas, Pat Patterson. They've got a lot of good defensive wings, and Damari Carroll. PJ Tucker is a monster defensively. Ibaka can slide down and defend against LeBron. They've got good rim protection now. So I really don't see how or Boston match up defensively with Toronto. But in terms of what they're able to do to slow down LeBron James, which is obviously the key to the Cavs offense, I think that's what gives Toronto a little bit of an edge in the playoffs.
Well, I think that's an interesting point. And if they get Lowry back, you know, they're putting out some really good defenders on the floor. And they have the opportunity to mess around, like you said, with a ton of different lineups, because you easily could play Carroll or Tucker at the four. You can play Ibaka at the five if you want, especially when you're matching up with the Cavs. And I think Tucker is an interesting piece. I'd kind of like to see him against LeBron in the playoff series, because, you know, he's extra tough and he's going to kind of wear him down because he doesn't back down at all. I'd probably say PJ Tucker's probably one of the strongest players in the league, pound for pound.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I was just agreeing with you. Like, you can just see it in the way he plays. Like, Actually, one of the things DeMar said when they found out they traded for PJ Tucker was, thank God, because I hate playing against them.
Yeah, and I remember I always, you know, bringing the Nets on this, but when they had Joe Johnson, he was doing his thing in the post against every guard and small forward in the league. The only player he, like, never could back down was PJ Tucker. Tucker would always hold his own, and he just, you know, he's a tough dude too, and he gives him that extra toughness, and, you know, he's not going to back down against LeBron. And DeMar DeRozan, like, you know, it's kind of crazy. People are still sleeping on him, and he's had, I think he tied a Vince Carter record recently, 30 games over 30 points or something like that.
Yeah, that's the most in franchise history. He tied it last night.
Yeah, so, and, like, people don't want to show him love, but he's a really good scorer. I think the lack of love is probably because he doesn't shoot the three ball a ton. He's all about that mid-range game and attacking inside. But that's what you want to see in the playoffs. He gets you buckets, and he gets you tough buckets all the time when you need them.
Yeah, in saying that, DeMar's three-point shooting has gotten progressively better as the season's gone on. So, you know, if that's a shot that he develops, or if he gets hot going into the playoffs, it's going to spell a lot of trouble for teams in the East.
And what do you think about Lowry? Obviously, Lowry's had a lot of struggles in the playoffs. Do you think the Raptors are being a little bit more careful with him? They want him to be fully healthy going into the playoffs? Because I think last year he was injured as well. So they're kind of taking it slow with him and hoping that he can come back. Is he going to be back before the regular season ends?
He'll probably come back for, if I were to guess, I'd say four or five games. Maybe a couple less. It'll depend on how he's doing. But he is shooting now, which is a good sign. They can't really do much in the playoffs. I know they've been great since he's been out, but in terms of playing against playoff caliber teams, there's not going to be much progression this year without Kyle at 100%.
Yeah, I think that's going to be the issue. So. It kind of sucks when, you know, you make moves like that. And I thought the moves that they made, I compliment them a lot. If they can, you know, keep Ibaka, that'd be nice for them going forward. But losing your best player always hurts. And it's funny, like, what do you think? You know, obviously there's been some talk of fans and Raptor fans saying, oh, we should get rid of Lowry. Like, it's kind of just ludicrous nonsense, correct?
Yeah, you'll find that Raptor fans in general are a little bit crazy sometimes. I remember the dark days when we went, you know, without even being close to the playoffs. So the fact that we're even, you know, competitive, and the fact that we're making the playoffs, and the fact that we're playing good basketball, that's all the reason why we'd want to keep Kyle Lowry, because we didn't really have a winning basketball team until he showed up. So I think he should be rewarded for that first and foremost. And secondly, he's not fallen off. He's been getting better with age. He's like a fine wine, right? So I don't see any reason to get rid of him. He's shooting 47% from the field this season, 41% from three. He's averaging 20 points, 5 rebounds, 7 assists. He's having a great season.
And the thing is, people are still, like, are sleeping on the Raptors, and they're holding on to that 4 seed, and they are missing a player, like you just said, who's averaging over 20 a game, shooting 40% from the field and over 40% from three. And, like, people are ignoring the fact about the Raptors. I'm definitely interested to see what they're going to do in the playoffs, and I want to see what Lowry's, like, healthy. And the East, I don't think, like we said, I don't think the Cavs will get knocked off, but definitely these teams can make it really difficult for the Cavs and kind of beat them up before they get to the finals.
Yeah, especially teams like Toronto, like Indiana, if they end up playing Indiana, but, you know, they've got a lot of size, a lot of physicality. So I think
got Paul George.
And if LeBron has spent time defending him, it's more wear and tear, right?
Exactly.
And I think that's their biggest concern going into the playoffs this year, is how much wear and tear is going to be on LeBron's body, and, you know, to a lesser extent, Kyrie's body heading into the finals. Because I don't think they're too worried about getting there. I think it's about getting there healthy.
Yeah, and even Tristan Thompson, you know, if he's going to have to bang around with these guys all game, and, you know, he plays hard every night. And me and Harris talked about this before, is, you know, if I'm the Cavs, I'm really looking for a sweep in the first round. You know, I want that extra rest really bad. You know, I'm trying to end a series as fast as I can, because I know LeBron's had to play a lot of minutes. I even know Kyrie's had to play a lot of minutes, and you want to get these guys some rest before they really have to go at it for 7 games with the Warriors.
Absolutely. I wouldn't be too worried about Tristan, though. He's made from iron, I believe. So
yeah, that's a tough one. Right there. But talking about another race, this is catching hype upon hype upon hype, and that's the MVP race. No, it's a two-horse race right now. If you guys don't know, Jonathan writes great articles every other week about the MVP race on OTGBasketball.com. It's right at the top right corner, so check that out. But I'm going to ask you, as our MVP guy, who's your pick for MVP right now, James Harden or Russell Westbrook? If you had a pick right now.
See, it's an interesting question because up to this point in the season, it really has been, you know, those two guys swapping places back and forth. And then for a few weeks, the Rockets and James Harden have just been on a different level. So for a few weeks, I've had nobody really even close to James Harden on the rankings, especially. But last night, I might have changed my mind. I think it's getting to the point where you just can't overlook what Russ is doing on a nightly basis and what he means to that team and every even when he missed that shot last night against San Antonio, you could tell he was going to take the last shot. Nobody else even looked at him for a pass. they just kind of looked with, you know, hopeful eyes that he was going to make the shot, right? And unfortunately last night he didn't, but you know, we saw what he's capable of against Dallas in those clutch moments. He's had a great season. At first, I was really, really against the idea of co-MVPs, but it's so tough to try and find a gap between these two.
Yeah, I would probably agree with you. I had Harden at the top of my rankings for most of the year, but then that recent stretch by the Rockets, Harden's a little banged up right now. I know his left wrist is a little bit injured, and Draymond Green took a nice smack at it last night. But Westbrook's 57-point triple-double, that might have just put me to another level. And that game was in a comeback. So he actually matters. And, like, the amount of work he has to put in to score on a nightly basis, like last night he wasn't just scoring on bad defenders. He was scoring on Kawhi Leonard. So Russ is out there. He's putting up work, and he's the heart and soul of this team. And it's really hard not to give him the MVP. But on the other hand, it's also hard to undermine what Harden has done. You know, averaging 11 assists a game and averaging, I think, 28 points a game and 8 rebounds is not bad at all. And I think he's the first player in, like, X amount of time to ever have 2,000 points and 2,000 assists in the same season or something along those lines.
Yeah.
So, co-MVPs wouldn't piss me off. It really wouldn't. And some people I know will be pissed off about it, but they're probably the ones who have a bias for one of these guys. So co-MVPs would be cool with me. I don't know how that would really work out if it could actually happen, but
it would be really unlikely just because of the way the voting's structured. But, you know, if they came out with the same number of votes, I don't know what the NBA, you know, could do in terms of finding a tiebreaker. But if they get the same number of votes, I think in this case probably be best to just let them both have the award.
Yeah, and actually, you know, they actually have a good relationship, so I almost think they wouldn't be as upset. It would be really ironic if it was like Kevin Durant and Westbrook fighting for MVP and then they got co-MVP. But Harden and Westbrook, I think they still kind of have a nice relationship.
Going back to last night, another thing I said last night was that if Harden had a great game last night, he came out, you know, put up his regular 30 and 11 and, you know, 8 rebounds, and they won last night, I think that would have cemented the award for him. I think he would have won it off last night's game, and I think the fact that he came up short and they lost in the fourth quarter really hurt his chances.
And they lost 3 straight, too. So, you know, and it's going to be in the mind of the MVP voters what happens right now. You know, obviously, OKC lost and they blew a lead, too. But they're kind of not expected to beat the Spurs. Houston's kind of expected to compete with them, especially when they play them for the second time this week. And before last night, Houston also had a disappointing loss against Portland. So Portland's obviously been playing better, but it's still, you know, you're expected to beat that type of team.
It's interesting. It really is going to come down to the last play of the season, I think.
Yeah, and you could see one of these guys on the last night of the season put up a game that might cement them as the MVP and knock the other guy off the top.
Absolutely.
I got a hypothetical for you. If Russell Westbrook and James Harden didn't exist, who would be your MVP in the NBA this season?
I would probably go with LeBron. The only thing that's stopping LeBron from winning his fifth award this season is the Cavs record. I think if that team were to win 60 games this year, I honestly think he would, with the numbers he's put up this season, I think he would have won MVP. His career, you know, for LeBron James to have a career high and rebounds and assists and not win the MVP, I would have laughed at that if you told me that, you know, before the season started. So it would probably have to be LeBron if it wasn't either of those two. It's just unfortunate that the team record isn't where it needs to be.
Do you think Kawhi would have a shot? You know, with the Spurs obviously having the record that they have, and just hypothetically, if the Cavs kept their record that they have and the Spurs were in the situation there, would Kawhi get your vote?
Here's my problem with Kawhi. The Spurs are something like 6-1 when he doesn't play. So how can he be the most valuable player on the league when there's a guy on the other conference whose team's 0-6 when he doesn't play?
That's a very good point. Yeah, because you obviously see the Spurs have Pop, and not to take away from Kawhi, because they have done a lot more ISOs this season specifically for him, and he's, I think he plays, you know, better defense on a nightly basis. Obviously, he's a little bit down this year, but I think it'd be tough if the Spurs had, you know, the Spurs keep the record they have, 60-plus wins, and the Cavs are struggling like they do. I think Kawhi actually might have came out on top, but it's tough to argue, like you said, with LeBron having career highs. I knew going to the season, I talked about this on the preview podcast, I had a feeling that LeBron was going to have his best year ever with assist-wise. I thought he would actually even average like a little bit closer to 10, but the numbers that he has right now is, because I knew that he was going to kind of take a step back as a scorer a little bit, because he realized that he has some scores on that team. But I didn't think he probably didn't think he'd have to play these type of minutes this season.
No, it's a big surprise, and you know, everybody talks about the rest, and you know, oh, he's missing games here, he's missing games there. At the end of the day, this guy plays, he's in the, what is it, like the top 3 in minutes played.
Yeah, and he's like top 2 in top 2 for like the last 5 or 6 seasons, or one, number 1, and there's only like one guy who's even close to him.
It's crazy. The guy doesn't, as for the amount of credit that he does get, he doesn't get enough credit for what he has to do for every team that he plays for on a nightly basis. He's expected to do everything. And, you know, if we look at the other great players in NBA history, they all had, you know, an extremely strong supporting cast. But when you look at LeBron's teams, yeah, they had, you know, he's had a few good players that he's played with, but the, you know, the rotations get really short in the playoffs. And he ends up having to do a lot more than, you know, say a Michael Jordan or a Magic Johnson or a Larry Bird or a Kobe Bryant. You know, those guys were, you know, particularly good at a few things. Whereas LeBron James, if he's not great at everything, the team doesn't win.
Yeah. And I mean, really the only thing that you could argue that LeBron's not great at, out of literally every aspect of the game of basketball, is shooting. And, you know, he can get stretches where he's super hot and where he had a good stretch in the finals last year. So LeBron can literally do everything, and we didn't even talk about what he does off the court and what he does, you know, with his teammates, teaching them, helping them in their roles as a leader. You see it every night. He's coaching from the sideline. I know sometimes that's probably annoying for Tyronn Lue, but he's still helping these guys get better every day. So he's adding – so it's like if LeBron was like some type – if it's like a trading card game, you have LeBron, and obviously he's the best card there is, but he also makes all your cards better as well. You know, he just gives them all boost in every category just because they're playing with a great like himself.
Absolutely. I think a lot of the people that have some strong dislike for LeBron James are going to change their opinion once he retires, because it's going to be a long time before we see a player like that in the league again.
Exactly. I mean, people, like we've always said this before, you know, that people love to hate greatness. So it's easy to hate LeBron.
Yeah. Until they leave, right? Because as soon as Kobe left, he became a
everybody loved him, and they had the farewell tour. And I've never heard so much shit talked about it. I've heard a lot of shit talked about LeBron, but Kobe got his fair share of everybody hating him because his, you know, his shooting percentages, his ball hogness, whatever. But then when he retired, everybody all of a sudden loved Kobe after they hated him for like 20 years. So
here's a question for you. Where do you think Kobe ranks all time?
Honestly, I really don't really get into the all time thing, because I think it's such a difficult thing to do. Is like ranking players from different eras and, you know, different positions and stuff. Honestly,
oh, yeah, there's no way to find a definitive answer. It's just it's kind of interesting to see where some people where they hang their hat, right?
Yeah, I would probably, for me, I'm like more into probably grading out positions. Like I would have him as like one of the top 3, top 5 shooting guards ever. But like when it comes to all time, it's really hard. I think I'm only willing to be like who's number 1, and I'd probably, you know, I have MJ at number 1 right now, but I think LeBron will catch him. And a lot of people might hate me for saying that, but you have to respect what LeBron does in all aspects of the game. Like, you know, Jordan's great, and he kind of is all – like one of my previous OTG contributors, Parth, would say this is, you know, like – because we're, like, younger. Jordan kind of was, like a fictional, like, character, like a folklore to us, because we didn't obviously get to see him as much because we were young when he first – you know, when he was really great. And at the level we're at now. So like seeing LeBron and seeing him have like the success now, it makes us like able to enjoy and understand it a little bit more.
Yeah. Jordan definitely has that kind of mythical aspect about him. You know, as the years go on, he missed less shots. He had more game winning shots, and he never missed a go ahead bucket. You know, the myth kind of just gets bigger and bigger every year that,
yeah, like they don't ever want to talk about anything bad. Like, and I'm not hating on MJ at all, but I'm just saying, like, they, you know, it's a lot. You'll see a lot of love.
But. Yeah, absolutely. I think you're right. I think he is the best player in NBA history at the moment. The thing that bothers me is that this idea that nobody can come close to him. Like there's Michael Jordan, and then there's just everybody else. That's the part that bothers me. I think right now, if you're looking at the best player of all time, there's Michael Jordan, and then LeBron's right there. They're one and two, and whoever you want to go with, that's up to you. But advanced metrics will back that up. If you look at career PER, or if you look at value over replacement player, or you look at bucks plus minus, in all those categories, it's LeBron and MJ that are one and two.
Yeah, so I don't have any issue with that. But actually, I wanted to touch on one thing. The Portland Trailblazers got some bad news today. Joseph Nurkic suffered a fracture in his leg, and he's going to be out 2 weeks. And Portland's currently sitting in that eighth spot. They just had a nice win over Denver this week. They're up two games. Do you think that knocks them out of the playoffs, or do you think they're able to hold on with Dame and CJ?
Well, do you believe in karma? Right after he said that thing to the Nuggets about enjoying their summer, something like this happens. And it's a devastating blow to the Blazers. He was playing so well, and he was getting a little bit cocky, and rightfully so. He wasn't treated the best in Denver, and I don't know if Denver can hold on to that eighth seed without him, because he's been a big, big part of what they've been able to do.
Yeah, and one of our writers actually just wrote something up about the Nuggets and how they kind of lack leadership, and that's kind of hurt them down the stretch and they're closing out games. Is, their best players are pretty young, and they're not able to really be a coach on the floor and get this team into the place it needs to be. So they're kind of been falling down the stretch. Because if you recall, Portland was a couple games behind Denver for a while, and they kind of made up some room, and they've gotten hot recently. Yeah, and a lot of that had to do with Nurkic.
Absolutely. I think over that their little stretch, he's been scoring in double digits in almost every single game, double digit rebounding in every game. He's been phenomenal, and he's not been playing that many minutes. And you would assume that as the season goes on, with the way he's been playing, he'd get rewarded with a few more minutes. But it's unfortunate that he went down, and I wouldn't be shocked if Portland lose that 8 seed because of it.
Yeah. And it sucks too, is because even, he'll probably not even be 100% by that, like the playoffs. He probably would miss the first few games maybe of the playoffs. So that sucks for them too. And like you said, he's been playing great, and they kind of like did Denver dirty in that trade. They got Nurkic, who's playing great, and they got a first round pick for Mason Plumlee.
Yeah, that's going to turn out to be an extremely one-sided trade.
I was kind of questionable about the trade from the start. Like, I love Mace. Obviously, he played on the Nets, but I didn't think Nurkic was that bad. I think they just didn't really have any leverage on him because they didn't play him. He couldn't play with Jokic, and they ended up trading Jokic. And trading Nurkic and a first-round pick for Plumlee, who I think that's too much, to be honest, for Plumlee. Like, from what he is as a player, he's probably a starting center in the NBA, but he's not, like, super good or anything.
I'm wondering if there was some locker room issues, and they didn't want him. They didn't want to keep him around.
Yeah,
because you can tell there's bad blood between him and the Nuggets organization. So I'm wondering if there was some bad blood in the locker room, and they wanted him out and wanted to replace him.
It makes sense. And Mace is kind of like a positive locker room guy, and Nurkic probably was upset because before Jokic came along, everybody was like, "Oh, this guy in Denver, this center, is about to be great." And then the next thing you know, it's all about Jokic, and he's the head of the team. He's the best player out there, and this guy doesn't. He had some games where he didn't see any minutes at all. So I'm sure you might be right. There's always some underlining issues that we really don't know about.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, but who knows? I mean, they've got a little bit of room. They still have that dynamic backcourt in Portland. So I mean, who knows? They might be able to hold on to it.
If you had a pick right now, get your pick for the 8th seed in the West and your pick for the 8th seed in the East.
Out East, I would probably say Miami or Indiana. I'll end up holding on to it. I really don't see Chicago squeaking. They've been playing okay lately, but I don't think Jimmy Butler can do it by himself. And personally, I don't want to see Chicago in the playoffs anyway. Out West, I'd like to see Portland hold on to the 8th seed. Just basing off, just going off of how they were playing before the Nurkic trade and how they were playing after, I really wouldn't be shocked if Denver catched them. I'll probably stay with Portland right now because I don't want to undersell Damian Lillard. He gets enough of that already. So I believe in Damian Lillard. I think he can maybe help them hold on to that eighth spot, but really could go either way at this point.
I think the one issue for Portland is going to be the lack of depth because I think Ed Davis is injured as well. So they'll be probably forced to play Myers Leonard a lot at center, which isn't going to spell well. So Denver's been kind of rough, though. They lost three straight. Just like if one of these other teams was actually in the race, they'd actually have a great chance to make the playoffs. But New Orleans, Dallas, even Minnesota all fell out probably about a week ago. I want to pick Denver because I like seeing young players achieve, but they're like on this bad stretch, and I feel a bad vibe from them. And I think, like you said, Portland has Dame, and Dame's going to will them to wins. Their defense is still going to be trash, but they're probably going to put up a ton of points with Dame and CJ. And then the East, I'll agree with you. I think Miami and Indiana hold on. Chicago just has bad vibes all over the place, but the Pacers have been playing like shit, to be honest. And they're kind of disappointing me because I hopped on a Central Intelligence, you know, a few weeks ago, and I was like, you know, the Pacers could be dangerous in the playoffs because of Paul George and, you know, the veterans they have in that team, and they've made me look pretty stupid.
Well, I mean, you weren't wrong. I'm not 100% sure what the issue is in Indiana because the talent's there. They have players to go to down the stretch. They've got a great young center in Miles Turner. I'm not 100% sure what the issue is, but I think they'll be okay. I think if when push comes to shove, they'll be able to get the job done.
Yeah, and Paul George has talked about the team not really having the type of effort and focus and, you know, respecting the situation because they were, I think, in the sixth spot like a week ago and now they're down to the eighth spot. Obviously, it's still really close out there. But this is a team that a lot of people had as a top four seed or a top five seed in the East going into the season, and they've been a complete letdown.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, they did re-sign Lance Stephenson, and he might be able to be that
that extra energy, you know, what he did for them when he was on the Pacers the first time. He was a good player, obviously, on there, and he had a few triple-doubles, but what he did bring was that extra edge and the extra nonsense, but it helped that team. Obviously, we all remember him blowing in LeBron's ear.
Hey, we might see that again this season. There's a good chance they match up in the first round.
Yeah, and like you said, I think the Pacers, like, as much as they've been disappointing, maybe they can turn a switch because they do have some guys that are good players. That two guard has really been the issue for them all season. Jeff Teague's had a pretty good year. Paul George has started off rough, but he's picking it up. Thad Young's a solid player all around. And Miles Turner, I don't know if he's taking the jump that they've wanted. He kind of lacks a little confidence. Talking to Corey a little bit about it, you know, he hesitates a lot with his jump shot, and they need him to hit that jump shot and be confident with him because it just adds another dynamic to the offense.
Yeah, he's a second-year player, and he's not exactly a star, so it's going to take him a while to develop that confidence.
Yeah,
but I'm not too worried about him. He's got so much talent there. He's coachable as well. So I don't see him wasting that talent. I think he'll make that jump eventually. He's going to be an all-star.
Yeah, and it kind of gives the Pacers the leeway to not say they want to lose Paul George, but if they did, they would have a young piece to start to build around a little bit. So,
absolutely.
But that wraps it up for today, Jonathan. Thanks for filling in for Harris. It's been great. Hopefully, next time we'll be talking about playoffs.
Hopefully, I can't wait. Thanks for having me.
No problem. And as always, thank you guys for listening and make sure you hit that subscribe button.